Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, welcome to another Retro Rahalastapa. Sadly, this one is chosen because the guest recently passed away. It's the fantastic Annabelle Giles, who was a great friend to me, a fantastic support to me, both appearing in our shows in the 90s, letting me write one of my plays in her shed in her garden. And she, by all accounts, just a fantastic woman. So many brilliant stories about her coming out, about how kind and generous she was to so many people. She's also brilliantly funny, as she shows in this fantastic interview. So I hope you will enjoy this tribute to the absolutely unique and wonderful Annabelle Giles. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brighton Theatre Royal. Please welcome a man who has allegedly been filmed satisfying himself. We'll find out more about that. It's Richard Herring. Oh, Brighton! Hello! Oh, lovely to be back. Look, the Theatre Royal. Full to the rafters as well. It's full. Don't look up there. It's full to the rafters. Don't look up there. There's no need. It's full. It's all full right to the top. It's amazing. What a beautiful theatre. Welcome to Richard Herring's Life Sexually Troubling podcast. That's with a question mark. It's a new direction for the podcast. You've got to find, there's so many podcasts now, you've got to find your niche. Otherwise, there's too many people interviewing people. So I'm going to get celebrities on, ask them if they've got pubic lice, and then work out if that's a bad or a good thing. That is going to be, what, are they sexually troubling? Question mark. And then we'll talk about that for an hour. I don't know if my guests have realised that's what's going to happen. But I was talking to the man dressed as Pikachu, wandering around Brighton beachfront on a hot September afternoon today. He calls it Rahalastapa, so I don't know if that's going to... don't know if that's going to catch on. Yeah, I got the thing I referred to in my fumbled intro was that I got an email this week, 3 days ago, and it said video, and then it had a password that I used to use, like one of my passwords written on it. It came into my junk mail, and it basically said that this guy had put some malware, infected my computer with malware, and it said, I'll read you a bit of the email. It's in my junk folder. I'm not sure it's genuine. I collected all your private data and I recorded you through your webcam satisfying yourself. I've never satisfied myself. I have to say, I'm always... It's just not satisfactory, is it? I've tried, but I just afterwards, there's a brief moment, and then just this sort of empty feeling of just guilt, and what I've just watched is so bad. What if anyone were to find out? I was worried because one time I did find some bare ladies on the internet, and I have masturbated while looking at the internet. Just once. So there's a possibility this guy's caught that on film. After that, I removed my malware from your computer to not leave any traces, he says. That's convenient, isn't it? Convenient, he's thought of everything. I can send a video to all your contacts, put it on social media, publish it on the whole web, including the dark web, where the sick people are. And I was feeling like I was one of the sick people because I'd been satisfying myself with it. I mean, there must be some people on the dark web who like to look at sort of weird, contorted men ejaculating for some reason. He said, I had 2 days, and then it was quite a complicated system of payment. There was lots of links. After receiving payment, I will remove everything. And I think you can trust this guy. So he seems trustworthy. So, I mean, I thought he did have a genuine password of mine. But it wasn't one I use anymore. I thought it's probably just some junk mail. I've signed up somewhere for something. They've got my password. But there's a chance that, you know, that could go out. But it was £1,000 I had to pay to stop it. And I thought, fuck it. I don't care. I weighed up and I thought, I don't care that much if me wanking goes on the internet. There's quite a lot of people I would like to see, have to see me masturbating. So if that went to all my social, there'd be quite a few thinking, oh, good, they've seen that. You know, because... If you do it just in front of them, then you get into Louis C.K., don't you? But you get into trouble. But if they've received that and opened it themselves, say they can't get me, can they? Can't get me for it. It's the perfect crime. So that's the decision I made. I decided to let it go. It was 3 days ago. I don't think it's happened. Leastways, my mum hasn't rung me up and said, why is that picture of you grimacing? I'm more worried they will find out what I was masturbating to. That is, I don't mind people seeing me masturbating. So far, so good. We'll see. How did they know that password? Right, my guest tonight on this one show. We're only doing one show, and don't let anyone tell you different. She is probably best known for being the narrator on Madame Tussauds' Inside Story. That's why we're here tonight to see. We'll get the inside story on the inside story. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome Annabelle Giles? Come and sit down. There's your microphone. There's some water. We thought of everything. Got everything for you.
Health and safety back there.
Oh, that is quite bad, but they hadn't noticed that nest of...
I know. Look at that. Should all be taped.
It should. Well, you should have tripped over and you could have made some good money out of the Theatre Royal there.
Well, I'd have broken my nose and sued you.
Yeah. Or me, yeah.
Can I do that?
You can have a bit of... Do you want me to...
It's all right, I can do it myself.
Can you do... That's all right, sorry, yes. Good, how are you doing?
Do you know, I'm okay. Did you
scared yourself.
Yes, I scared myself. I shot my load too soon. Yes, I'm okay. Hasn't it been a lovely day today? Oh, my God. This is why we live here. Do you see why we live here?
It was very lovely. I did feel sorry for the Pikachu man on the scene.
I feel sorry for you not living here. It's tragic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all right.
Because you're no longer in London, though, are you?
Oh, no, I live in Hertfordshire.
Oh, Hertfordshire.
We had a fire, like you like fires, in, and we had a fire in our village the other day. So
did you?
Yeah, so...
We like fires.
You love burning piers down, don't you? That's your main thing. You love that.
I think we all know who did that, but we can't say.
We had the field that I do my stone collecting on, went burnt down.
Which is quite impressive. The stones were fine. A couple of them are charred. That's the, it proved the super. Don't worry, Annabelle.
No, I'm
I'll get you, I know you're a psychotherapist now, and we will get into that later, yes, that particular.
I feel we should talk about your childhood a bit more already.
We will do. We'll talk about your childhood a bit. So, what do you remember being the narrator on Madame Tussauds?
Do you know, I saw that the other day. I've got the most awful. It's like, hello, welcome to Madame Tussauds. It's absolutely marvellous here. Some really funny waxworks. It's really awful. It's one of the first things I ever did. And I'm frightfully, frightfully posh. I mean, this is me really rough, obviously. But, you know, I was frightfully like this, and I had a very tinny voice up here. And it was just so embarrassing. I can't believe... Have you really, really deep Googled?
Of course I have. Well, that's not that. Just gone the IMDb page. That's not that.
Oh, I didn't even know I had one. Which, yeah. Are you sure that's me? Because there's a lady in Australia called Annabelle Giles, who I often get voiceover requests for.
Okay,
I go, well, I would come, but I can't be in Sydney by tomorrow.
Unless she's also done the inside story of Madame Tussauds, then I think it's yours.
What a bitch. Yeah, it could be her.
What is the inside story of Madame Tussauds?
I don't think there is one. I think it's just that they make wax figures from wax.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's what happens. And then when someone goes out of fashion, you get removed from the floor.
Yeah. Were you ever in the position where you had a wax worker?
No, hardly known at all. They're all thinking I'm Annabelle Croft, the tennis player. And someone's going, shit, where is it then? Exactly.
Well, you've had an amazing career of a very varied... You've had a go at a lot of things, Annabelle. That is something that's fair to say.
That sounds like I haven't succeeded.
It does sound like that.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been quite rude already. It's lucky I know you, isn't
it,
really?
You've had a crack.
Very rude man. Terrible.
But you started... I'll go back to when you were at school. You were expelled from school at 16. For going to see Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel.
Yeah.
And smoking in the street.
Oh, yeah, now I've seen smoking in Yeovil outside the Wimpy Bar. Mm-hmm. John Player special, thanks. And, oh, God, we had this whole plan. We knew we were foiled because we got on the bus and the conductor said, the seat's upstairs, and we thought, oh, God, and I had to go and sit down. And I was in mufti, which is breaking all rules. Anyone know what mufti is? It's like your own clothes. So not school uniform, so, like, normal, relatively normal clothes. You weren't allowed clogs, no backless shoes, encouraged bad behaviour. It was a boarding school, obviously. And so I went and sat down on the top thing. The three of us who'd escaped in mufti at the bus stop, get on the bus. I'm made to sit down next to my piano teacher.
Oh.
So I just sat like this, hoping she wouldn't know it was me.
Yeah.
And she sort of sat, you know, staring sideways, got off. Then we were to meet one of our boyfriends. Oh, it wasn't me that had the boyfriends, Claire Seidlin. She's a bit better developed. And... We met her boyfriend in the Wimpy Bar, all had a Wimpy, and then stood outside smoking while he went to get his car. We were useless at smoking. We were about 15, going, you know, really bad smoking. Got in the minute. He'd bought his friend Nigel Nolman, who nobody fancied, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, but we just couldn't. We tried, but we couldn't. So the three girls, Nigel Nolman, who was far too big for a mini, and this boy, Rob, and off we went.
Yeah.
And we went to see Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel at the Colston Hall in Bristol.
Oh, cool.
You must know that because you're a cheddar boy, aren't you?
Yeah.
And when we came out, the plan was that he would put... Rob, the driver of the mini, would change into mechanic's overalls. Is this quite long and boring? Or?
No, it's good. I'm very excited to see
would change
your recall is very good
so
on
he
this.
Would, it's very, very good. We planned it for eight... We had ages. Yeah. We did nothing at school. So he would change into... So not unlike what I'm wearing now, but a white version, and he'd smeared grease over it and things like that. And he rang the school and said that Mrs. Seidlin, my friend Claire's mother, had asked him to ring ahead and say that the mini had broken down, so he was going to drive us back.
Right. So he changed his overalls to make a phone call?
Yeah, no, because then he drove us back and said, all right, you've got the girls now then, like that.
Yeah.
And so we were dropped off, but they knew because Miss Barnett, the piano teacher, had phoned from Yeovil to say that she'd sat on a bus next to me. So we were already caught, but we had such a watertight story that we stuck to it. And you know what? The whole school never breathed a word. And not until right now, if they're listening, and I'm sure they are, all those teachers from the 1970s, before everyone was born, are all listening now. And that's what we did. And no one at school told or anything.
Oh, wow.
And we had to be in bed by 6:30 every night for the rest of the term. We weren't allowed to watch Top of the Pops. No records, and we weren't allowed to sweep the yard because everyone knew that we knew there was ice cream in the freezer. Boarding School Life by Annabelle Giles. Thank you.
Wouldn't it make it awkward with the piano teacher the next piano lesson?
Yeah, well, I never spoke to her again.
Okay.
No. We were all leaving the school anyway.
Okay.
We weren't, but we said that. So we'd just done our O-levels anyway, so we couldn't really O-levels, bless me. Did you do O-levels?
I did O-levels,
did
yeah.
you? You're so sweet.
I mean,
sweet.
This, a lot of the references in that story have dated us both, and I... Wimpy. I mean, it's sort of like a McDonald's. It was like a McDonald's. It was like the English McDonald's.
Yes, it was a sort
John
of,
Player cigarettes.
Yes, John Player like black and gold packet was yeah. their point.
Smoking on a bus. You were allowed to smoke yeah, on
it's
buses.
It's fine. We could do whatever we wanted. We were the lucky generation.
The clogs. I'm not getting the clog. I mean, it was Somerset in the 1970s. So
but we weren't allowed smocks. To walk around in backless shoes because they encouraged bad behaviour. And the clogs were actually agony.
Yeah.
Have you ever worn a pair of clogs? You slip over the edge, and they're wooden. And they're agony to wear. Yeah. So
yeah,
whatever.
I haven't
anyway,
ever
pointless.
Worn clogs.
Yeah.
And so your first foray into success came. You were working as a secretary for a publicist,
agency.
Advertising agency.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And well, this must. I want to get to the bottom of this story. It sounds made up for stuff to begin
so
with.
It's so not made
and
up.
And also,
you're just jealous.
So you
obvious.
Went to a photo shoot to watch the photo shoot as a secretary at the advertising yeah. agency. And they took your photo yeah. and then used the photo in the advertising yeah. campaign.
Absolutely true.
How did the model who'd been booked to do that photo session
well,
feel?
She was quite cross.
Yeah. yeah. So because, you don't quite well, cut it. We'll just get whoever. Oh, she'll do.
Well, and then I was getting people ringing up the agency saying, can we use... Who's that model that you used in that Boots No. 7 advert? Because we'd like to use her. And I said, well, actually, it's me. And they said, oh, are you a model? And I went, well, no, I'm just the secretary here. And so they said, do you work at weekends? I said, well, I could. And I was earning more at weekends than I was in a year working as a secretary. But I still didn't want to leave my job because I felt very loyal to the company.
Yeah.
And in the end, they offered me a really exciting contract, which was I could keep my job as a secretary if I would exclusively be the Boots No. 7 girl for £2,000 a year. Now, that was, you know, I had been signing the models' invoices and they earned that a day. So I didn't quite see why I should be exclusive. And so I said, well, no, you either pay me what you pay a proper model or I leave. And they went, OK, leave. Oh, not what I was expecting. So then I rang Models One, which was like the best agency at the time. And I said, I'd like to be a model. And they said, how old are you? And I said, 23. And they went, too old. And they said, and how tall are you? And I said, 5'6". I'm not, I'm 5'5". I said, I'm 5'6". And they went, too short, too old, too short. Sorry, bye. And then my boss phoned them back and said, can you just see her? Because we're trying to get rid of her and we just need her to go somewhere. We need to know she's going to be all right. Just see her. So I walked in and they went, oh, my God, you're the girl that we're all looking for. They said, we thought they'd retouch the eyes because their model, who'd done the original shoot, had brown eyes and I had blue eyes. She had it in her book. She had it in her portfolio going, yeah, no, I can do blue eyes as well. Yeah. And I got made into a model and I was so upset because I yeah. just wanted to be a secretary. I did, though. It's tragic, I know. Yeah. A bit of a secret, sort of pathetic person.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's sort of a humble brag, isn't it? I was so gorgeous.
No, because no one was... No, I was so short-sighted. I used to wear really thick glasses. I'm minus 5.25 if you've got any opticians, and I know everyone's in IT, but I am minus 5.25, yeah. which is very, very bad.
Yeah.
And they had to put... Because they'd sort of did me up in these scarves and things for the shoot, they had to... had to put a piece of card either side of the lens because I couldn't see. Right, so they say smile, and I go, and they go, no, over. There we are, there, okay? And then I blink and go, and they go, no, back a bit. So they just put, and they did that all the time I was modelling, so I couldn't see what I was yeah. doing.
So it's essentially that sitcom trope where that you're a secretary with thick glasses
yeah,
and your hair tied
down,
up,
yeah.
and then you took out the glasses.
Yeah, tragic.
And then.
Yeah. And I tried to capitalise on it, and it didn't work at all. And I used to do things like I'd not take my glasses to castings and things, you know, where you show your photos and all that. I'd not take my glasses and just sort of go, hi, I'm the model, you know, like that. Do all that, and then say they'd show them my book, and they'd go, oh, yeah, thanks very much, bye. And I'd go out through the broom cupboard. I couldn't remember which door I'd come in. Really dreadful. And in the end, everyone knew me and just said, you know, it's fine. I used to arrive at work, and they'd ring the model agency saying, we've got some terrible girl here. Really, really thick glasses, not very pretty. And they said, just put some makeup on her, she'll be fine. It's very much a before. I did lots of before and afters.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true, though. It's really sad. I know. So I was made into a model.
Yeah.
It's not really a humble brag, because I was furious. You know, seriously, it's a really boring job. It's really dull. You just sit there and people come and do things and they think, fuck, can we start now? And then, well, and then they go, lunchtime. You go, for God's sake, I haven't done anything except sit here and have yourself pulled about. No, I didn't travel anywhere because I was too short, you see. I didn't do bikinis.
You met pop stars, though? You were in,
I did meet pop stars. I married one of those. That was quite. I bet you've Googled that as well, haven't you? So you know how I ran off.
I know everything. I'm just trying to get it out of you and then find extra stuff.
You're nice, but you're quite scary. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I know everything about you. So how did that? So mid-year, you were married to...
Well, Mitchell cast me in a pop promo he was making, and he cast me because he's not very tall. He's not called Mid short for midget, by the way. I feel I should say this. He's short for midget because he was in a band where there were two Jims, so they reversed his name to M.I.J. Oh. So that's why he's called Midge, nothing to do with height. However, he decided to cast me as the part of his girlfriend because I was the shortest model in London, let's be honest. And so we turned up at the airport. You have to turn up with no makeup and clean hair and all that. And I did, because I was professional. And all the other girls, who also bought their passports to go to Sky, all the other girls had full makeup on. So he took one look at me and went, I'm not having her as my girlfriend in this thing. So he swapped me on the plane. By the time we got off the plane, they said, there's been a change of cast. And, well, you're going to be the keyboard player's girlfriend. And you, lovely, beautiful girl, you can be his. So I was furious. So I sort of sat there, sort of being interesting rather than beautiful. I thought that was a better plan. and he quite liked me. And then I was going to get married, and I popped in. They said, come to the edit and see the thing, because by the time you come back from your honeymoon, it'll all be over. So I popped into the edit, and they had the whole thing saying, I'm getting married in the morning, with a huge Jeroboam, is it? A big, big thing of champagne, one of those big jumbo. Why would you want that? But anyway... And I burst into tears and went, I don't really want to get married, I'm a bit scared. So he said, run off with me, and I did.
Wow.
I know. And everyone goes, oh, how brave. It wasn't brave, it was ridiculous, and I was haunted by it for years afterwards.
Did you tell the guy that you were going to marry about it, or did he just turn up at the church and go, that's weird?
Yeah, I can't really, yeah. I didn't know where I was. I got really drunk, and I ended up in Bristol Holiday, and I thought I was in Ireland. And I phoned my parents, and they went, where are you? We've tried every hospital and thing. And I said, well, I'm not coming.
Wow.
I know. Don't do that. It's horrid. Don't do it. Vicar had a heart attack. I can't tell you. Bridesmaids, distraught.
Yeah.
Then my parents froze the vol-au-vents and served them to me for many years later. I'm quite nice, really. I just was very drunk. I think that was the thing, yeah.
Well, you know, it's better to find out before the when. Preferably a bit longer before
and,
the wedding.
And you know, it was about 6 months ago I found out that I'd made the right decision. I can't really say how because obviously people are still alive and well, but I had made the right decision without knowing it. I'd actually saved everybody.
Were you
going
to marry Fred West? Well done. Got out of that.
Maybe.
Phew.
Must have known.
So were you with Midge around the time of Live Aid? Were you
I
at
was,
Live Aid?
Yes. No, I was. I remember him ringing from the train. He had a huge phone, obviously, big as the train, and said, he'd just done The Tube. Do you remember The Tube with Paul Yates? Anyone under 45 is going to find this the most boring
There's
podcast.
No one under 45 listening. There isn't.
In the world, is there? No.
Yes, look at that guy. He's about 100, this guy.
Oh, yes, that's all right. Hi, nice. How'd you do this? Nice to see some older people. Lovely. We are still alive, by the way. Yeah. He rang from Newcastle and said, oh, there's a terrible thing on the news. Have you seen it? And it was Michael Burke's report. And he came back and said, we're going to do something. Me and Bob are going to do something. And then he started writing this song. And then we had a little recording studio in the bottom of the garden, and we kept getting these messages on our answer machine saying, oh hi, it's Paul Weller here, I can't come on Friday, I'm going to be there, you know, oh hi, is this Bono? And I was going, are people pretending to be people and ringing up? And he went, no, it's true, they're all coming to the studio. So the day some of them came to do a little bit of pre-recording, I was ironing very much against the window going, oh my god, look at that, all these people in the garden. And then I was at the actual Band-Aid recording, which was amazing, because the only people who were there who shouldn't have been there were me and Paula.
Right.
And that was quite a thing, because I knew this was something huge. And I typed up the words for the song. And I have to say, it was going to say, there won't be snow in Ethiopia, there's Christmas time. And then people worked out that didn't quite scan.
Right.
So I've got the actual Now people are going to burgle my house, aren't they? Yeah. But I've got the actual thing with Ethiopia crossed out and Africa written in.
I mean, there will be snow in Africa because Mount Kilimanjaro has snow on it all the year round. So it was still an incorrect...
Yeah, go on. They're pop stars, Dan. They don't have to know that sort of thing. I mean, on the B side, if you've got it at home, listen on the B side because there's all sorts of messages from assorted pop stars. And we had to record them, you know, before they went home. Can you just do a message for the children? People, I'm not saying who. I'll tell you later. I'm not saying who, but some people said, I hope everyone in Ethiopia gets all the presents they want for Christmas. We didn't put that bit on. No. I'll tell you later who
that was.
OK,
tell me later. Yeah. Then I'll just put it at the end of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I'm not going to tell you.
I'm going to guess it was Simon Le Bon.
No.
OK.
We can't libel people on it.
Well, I can guess. That's not libeling. I'm not saying it was.
It's a guess and it's not true.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. So that's not libel. That's the opposite of libel, unless it's untrue, in which case Simon Le Bon can say, I did say that and I'm suing you for £1 million because I am that stupid. But he isn't that stupid. We have ascertained that. It was one of the others.
Simon Le Bon is very nice and everyone's jealous of him because he's married to Yasmin Le Bon, who is gorgeous.
Yeah.
So I know what your beef with him is.
Good. I love Duran Duran. Couldn't get the high notes, could he? But he was good. He was good.
I'll tell you what he does do. In that song, actually, he does go, and when you're having fun... And anyone who does anything at all will tell you you're supposed to sing on the vowel, not the having fun... Like that. He goes, fun. But it's very sweet.
Yeah. No one's really done a real takedown of the Live Aid single, have they? That's, I think it's time to have a go at those pricks.
I'm not doing myself any favours, am I? I'm not really a very nice person.
And were you at the big concert, Live Aid concert?
Yeah. I was there. I remember I was wearing a terrible thing. I looked like a deck chair. It was awful. You know, you remember things by what you're wearing. I was, oh, God, it was like a big blue and white striped thing with shorts. It was like a short suit. Oh, God, I'm so embarrassed. But we went by helicopter. That was very exciting.
Yeah.
And then Princess Anna came and sort of looked under her fringe at everybody and shook hands and all that. And I remember someone making a comment about pants. And her saying something like, what makes you think I'm wearing any? Wow. And me going, you slag! And I didn't say that. I didn't say it out loud. And us all going, blimey, she's a bit fruity. All the men, hopeless. Like, oh. She had a real something about her, Princess Diana. They all adored her.
I saw Princess Diana at Wimbledon. I've told this story a billion times. I was going out with Sally Phillips.
I do remember Sally at the time.
And her dad was the... He was an ex-tennis champion. He was the deputy head of Wimbledon, whatever it was. So we got quite good seats. Not that good, but we were quite close to the royal box, or to give her official title, the Princess of Wales. And that joke used to go down a lot better before 97. I tell you, that used to kill. Then between 97, 99, 2000, people hated that joke. I mean, I carried on doing it because I thought, well, what's gone wrong with that? And there was a point where I was looking at her, and it was the little Prince William. He was all tiny and had hair and everything, and it was great. And I was looking at her, and she must have sensed my eyes boring into it. She turned round and looked at me through her fringe, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know the royal protocol, so I just pulled a stupid face, and she sort of laughed. And everyone around me, and Sally hadn't seen, everyone around me had seen it and was all laughing, and I was all blushing, and it was quite sexy. I was hoping she'd whisk me away. I mean, I was going out with Sally. It would have been rude. But what a story that would have been to tell.
I do think my story was better.
It was. Well, you met her, but I made her laugh.
And she was talking about pants.
I made her laugh.
It might not have been you she was looking at, though.
Yeah, but it was me. She definitely used to look me right in the face and she laughed. And I like to think, you know, that was the one bit of happiness she got. In that. At least just before she died, 2 or 3 years before she died, she had that little moment of happiness. Probably as the life was ebbing away, she thought, I'd love to see that guy again.
Guy. Still hanging on to that.
Maybe thought that. May she rest in peace. So lovely tribute, isn't it? They should have had me at the funeral after
Elton John.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We're working through chronologically, which is fine, which is nice. We'll go through the whole thing.
Oh, God. We've got long enough. I'm quite old.
Because then you were on Razzmatazz.
I was. That was my first TV job where I bluffed my way in saying Channel 4 about to give me my own series. They weren't. I was just making that up. And they said, oh, you can come and do something for us if you like. Mm-hmm. And then they sort of changed their mind when they sobered up, these two blokes I met at a party. Changed their mind when they sobered up and said, well, you have to come to Newcastle. So I did.
Right.
And then they said, well, you have to come up with your own idea. So I did. And they said, can you do that in the 1.5 minutes we're going to give you? And I went, yes. And I basically did makeovers. I turned children into pop stars.
Right.
By using net curtains and all that. But I had to speak so quickly to get it into a minute and a half. It was, yeah. So that was quite good fun. And then Sarah Green was watching that.
Yes.
And Sarah Green then said, oh, why don't we have her as our fashion expert on Going Live? Do you remember Going Live? We were like, yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. It's real, this. I'm not making it up. And then I became the fashion expert and I taught people how to jazz up their jotters. Like, put some lipstick on and kiss it and then you've got kiss marks on your jotter. Really bad. Yeah. But they didn't mind. And I said that Bros would never make it big. And in a way, I was right. And then I did Night Network, where I interviewed people like Dusty Springfield, who is very nice, and Belinda Curtis, who's a dentist, who's Richard Curtis's sister.
Okay.
Yeah, I said, you have to take precautions. She said, yes, I have to put a condom on every finger. And it was very weird, I know, but she was funny at the time. I'm sorry I said that. So then I did Night Network, and I just sort of started being a TV presenter, really. Yeah.
Well, TV presenter, and then you're an actor as well. You were in Riders. And,
I was Grania Pringle, otherwise known as Grab Your Winkle.
Okay.
I wasn't very good at that.
And you were in...
I didn't have to grab anybody.
You were in the TV series Fist of Fun.
I was in the TV series Fist of Fun, wasn't I?
Yeah, well.
What the best thing about being in Fist of Fun was that you... Because do you remember we did that Edinburgh show? Well, I did an Edinburgh show.
Yes.
And it went down quite well. And you came to see it once, and then you couldn't believe. You thought, maybe that was a freak night. And you came the next night as well, just to check it wasn't. And it wasn't. It was still good that night too, wasn't it?
It was a very good show.
Yeah, thank
Finding
you.
Mr. Giles, was it that show?
You're looking for Mr. Giles. I interviewed men to be my boyfriend. Nobody passed.
Well, that might be why I kept coming back, wasn't it?
But you were in the flat upstairs. You and Stu were in the flat upstairs, weren't you, from me?
Yes.
And I remember going up and telling you about how they tried to give me a gotcha, but I guessed it. And once I'm on one, as you can tell, I don't really stop talking. I've got ADHD. Can you guess? I don't know. And so I told you the story, and you and Stuart were sort of backed up against the wall as I was telling the story about guessing the gotcha. And then I think you quite liked me out of desperation. Just sort of went, yes, you're quite nice. Could you go back down to your own flat now, please? And then you very kindly invited me on Fist of Fun. And I was so excited. I thought, gosh, I'm in with the cool kids at last. And I got the script and they said, yes, we need you to turn up as yourself. I seem to remember I had to knock on a door and ask for something. Is
it
that
was a
right?
sketch where it was a sketch about Jesus came to a guy and said, I'm coming to your house, have a big feast ready for me. And the guy gets the feast ready and then loads of people come to the door, but they aren't Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
There's an old, bald man and woman who's menstruating.
Yes, I remember she had a notice around her neck saying, "I am menstruating."
Sally.
Yeah.
And then at the end, Jesus turns up and goes, "Did you not recognise me when I came? I was all those people." And then Stuart, the man, gets angry with him for making him make a feast. and it was the first of the Jesus sketches we did. We actually had to edit it because there was a bit where Stuart slapped Jesus in the face.
Oh.
And they wouldn't let us because he was going, which is where that idea, if you remember that one, began. He slapped in the face and we had to cut it. So there's an odd edit. But yes, you were...
Well, the best thing for me was getting the script through. That I thought, I've now got a script with my name in it. And I went to my part and it said Annika Rice. You didn't know I knew that, did you?
I think we changed it.
She obviously said no.
So
just went down the A's.
I think David Baddiel was our first choice.
God. I mean, really?
Because we liked the idea of David Baddiel. It was like there was a line saying, David Baddiel, it was David, there's all these people coming in, it's David Baddiel. He does a lot of work for the disenfranchised. And we just thought that was funny because we couldn't imagine him doing anything for the disenfranchised. Whereas I think with you, you can imagine you did do a lot of work with the disenfranchised, so it wasn't...
I didn't, because as I've shown, I'm not very nice.
Yeah. Mm. So that was... And you did our radio
show. And I was on Richard, Not Judy.
Yeah.
Did that with you.
Yeah.
Yes, it was nice. I was kind of your pet, wasn't I? And then I don't know what happened. Well, then you didn't do TV things like that.
That's anymore, what happened. I was no longer on TV, so...
You sort of failed in that career and moved on to... No, you didn't. You went on to do sort of proper stand-up and things like that, didn't you?
Yeah, but I couldn't have you in that, could I, Annabelle?
No, not really. Not really, no, I know. So I had to go and make my own career for myself.
You did all right.
Yeah. Well, I wrote books next, didn't I?
So you've done everything. You're a novelist, you wrote three novels.
I did, I know. Isn't it mad? Well, do you know what? Well, I had Ted, my son, who's here somewhere, so I can't be too rude, although it's never stopped me before. I had Ted, and I had to stay at home because Ted was quite a handful, shall we say. Nightmare. and so I thought, well, I couldn't be off on location everywhere being glamorous, you know. And so I thought, right, well, I need a job that I can do at home. And I thought, I know, I'll write a book. So I had a shed in the bottom of my garden. And I wrote in there, as you know, you wrote one of your masterpieces.
I wrote a play in your shed.
You did, didn't you? Was it a good one or slightly shitty?
I thought it was good, but it didn't do very well, so I'll blame you.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry, it's the shed vibe.
Thank you for the use of your
shed. My book, on the other hand, number 6 in the bestsellers. So there we go. But anyway, so I thought, well, I'll write a book, and then Penguin picked it up, and then I did another one and another one. It was amazing. Because all I was doing, really, was finding a way to earn money and stay at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's quite lucky. It's like this, you know, it's this amazing career.
I'm very, very lucky, though.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you can tell, can't you? I'm just lucky.
Well, I don't think you can be lucky. You can't be lucky again and again. I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, happenstance there right at the beginning with the being in the right place at the right time.
Yes, but, you know, I didn't go to university or anything. I've got no A levels. I've got 4 O levels. I took maths and got an E and then took it again and got a U. Do you know what I mean? It's not like I'm really clever, but also I'm driven by the need to keep me and Ted and my daughter Molly, who's now far too old. I can't even say it. Do you know how old she is?
I do.
Yeah. So I was sort of driven by the need to feed them, really, because I couldn't rely on anybody else to do that. So I really had to sort of keep at it. And I wanted to sort of be at home and be able to be, you know, quite mean to them.
Yes.
At times, you know, because I don't think you should respect children too much. I don't know why we do this child-worshipping thing. It's really bad. It's not worked out well. We've got children that can't do anything now. Oh, my mum will do it for me. You know, mine, do it yourself or don't do it at all.
Yeah. Mm. And so you moved to Brighton?
I moved to Brighton because Brighton is a place that has very good social care. And Ted needed a bit of extra help here and there because he was born with things. He won't mind me saying, because basically, he's a poster boy for it. A thing called XYY syndrome, which means he's got an extra Y chromosome. And so he needed a bit of extra help, a bit of sort of autism, a bit of ADHD, a bit of Asperger's, a bit of all sorts of things. And London is not good for children. I don't really think London's very good, full stop, myself. And I'd sort of slightly lived that life. I brought up my daughter and I was doing the same school run, only the traffic was a bit worse and the teachers were a bit more jaded. And I just thought, ugh. So we... moved down here, and down here in Brighton, there is the most amazing organisation called Amaze, which looks after, which looks after parents of children with special needs who need looking after more than the children, I have to say. and, you know, and I was really helped. I needed help. And Brighton's very, very good with its disenfranchised. We look after our own. And I'm really, really proud to live here. I love Brighton. I'm so thankful to Brighton because it's held us. You know, it's not, it, being a single parent is the most awful thing. It's awful. It's boring, it's hard, it's tiring, and it's thankless, especially with ungrateful wretches like mine. Yeah. And so, and it's just a joy living here, because if all else fails, there's the sea. Yeah. You know, we've got the sea. We see the sea every day. It's beautiful.
Put him in a little raft and push him out.
Exactly. Drown the fucker, that's what I say. You know, fine. He's sadly too tall to
bump into a burning pier.
Yeah, with any luck, I'd set him on fire. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, but so I moved here because I just, I wanted some sky. You know, the space and the sky, and the people were lovely. I was looking around a couple of houses before I moved here just to see what I could afford, etc. And I came out and someone was fiddling with my car. And I said, excuse me, can I help you? And this man said, yeah, there's a traffic warden around the corner, so I was just putting a ticket on your car for you. I thought, oh, my God, I have to live here if the men are like this. Never found another one like that, but, you know, it was a nice idea. Yeah, everyone is really nice here, aren't they? I mean, we all chat to each other and... We're quite civil.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a nice place.
It is a nice place.
It's full of weirdos, isn't it?
But yeah, we like weirdos. We embrace weirdos. As a man goes past my window every day on a penny farthing. I love it. I mean, you know, I live in Kemp Town, obviously, and everyone's completely mad. But I like that. I don't want to live in, you know, Waitrose.
No.
Oh, no, no offence to Waitrose. I love Waitrose. Send me vouchers. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. You know, I don't want to live in a normal place. I like living in a
character. You're still sort of doing bits and pieces of telly and things as well. I mean, you work as a therapist. Is that your main job now?
Yeah, I did. Well, telly sort of gave me up because I bought a house and I did it up and Ted was going off the rails. He won't mind me saying, right off the rails. And so Ted was going off the rails. And so I thought I really need to just focus on him for a couple of years. So I did up this house and sold it for much more money than it was worth, to be quite honest. I hope they're not in, anyway. And bought a smaller house, and then really focused on Ted. And Ted is now a really lovely young man. I'm not just saying that because he's here. You know, bit. But, you know, he is really lovely. And I sort of really focused on him. And then I thought, right, well, I'll just go back to TV. So I rang up TV and said, hi, Annabelle Giles here, ready to come back. And they went, who? And I said, blah, blah, blah. I'm Annabelle Giles. And they said, we'd never heard of you, because, of course, everyone's 10 in TV, aren't they? They're literally teenagers, or it's half term or something. But, you know, I've got children older than people in charge of TV now. So I said, yes, I'm really sorry. I haven't really got any, you know, I haven't done anything for about 10 years because I've been writing books. And they went, no, no, we don't really read books, we're TV. So I thought, I'm not going to be able to, you know, and we've just ran out of money, full stop. We ran out of everything. So I had to go on benefits in order to survive and things. And I really learnt what it's like to be properly poor and desperate. And I got very depressed. And it was very, very, very difficult time. But I survived. And I thought, TV doesn't want someone like me going, you know, it's all, you know, we can do whatever. It didn't at that time anyway. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I really need to do something a little bit more useful. Because I'd learnt how to survive. I'd gone from the opposite. I went from riches to rags. And I learnt how to survive that. And I thought I should really be passing this on or helping other people because it is possible. It's not very nice, but it's possible. And so I thought, I know. I'm also getting very old because I'm 60 now. And I thought,
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. That's so sweet of you. I say that because you're 52. And that's unbelievable, isn't it? It's all his hair. I mean, it's amazing. So, yeah, look, tousled 52-year-old Richard Herring. No. So I thought what I need to do is a job that I can do sitting down and a job that no one will stop me doing unless I go bonkers, in which case I shouldn't really be doing a job at all and someone could at last put me in a home. I can't wait. So why don't I do something that, you know, that would help a lot? So I decided I'd train to be a therapist.
Okay.
And I'd had enough therapy in my life, my God, you know, for years and years and years. I've been going religiously to talk about myself and pay someone to listen. And so I just thought, well, why don't I see what I can do? And so I've now been doing it about 3 years or something. Mm. I don't know. Well, longer than that because I had to... Anyway, whatever. And I've got a really lovely load of clients who some come in and go very quickly and some stay for a long time. And I'm slightly unconventional. I'm not a therapist who sits and nods, goes... I don't do that. I just chip in. In fact, I probably do more talking than them. I don't know why anyone would think that was true. Weird. And I like it. I really like it. It's quite a tough job, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite hard because all I hear is pain and difficulty and horror and, like, damage that people do and the horrible things people say they come and go, oh God, and I go, hi, come in, sit down, you know. But it's it's nice to be able to, I mean, what I do is we kind of, I do it with a bit of humour. I know I'm not that funny, but I find if you make someone laugh, I go, well, that's because, and they go, oh God, yeah. You know, it's quite a good tool to do it. And I'm slightly sort of unconventional, and, you know, we draw pictures and we sort of mess about. And but, I, you know, it seems to work and people seem to quite like it.
And, you know, if people are depressed, you can go, well, you know, I had to eat a kangaroo's anus in the jungle.
Exactly.
So your life's not that bad, is it?
I'll tell you what I've eaten. Exactly. Yeah. I think your husband's bad. You know, do you know what I mean? I mean, you know, sometimes I think, oh, for God's sake, just leave him. But mostly, I just think, you know, I know what it's like to be stuck. I got really stuck, you know. I was stuck at home on my own with a special needs child, no money, no nothing. And I thought, I'm sure I was supposed to be glamorous and exciting, and I was a model and all that. And it just, you know, I didn't really have anything. And I felt really stuck, and I thought there's got to be a way out. And there is a way out, and knowledge is power. That's the way you do it. You find out stuff. And then you try it, and then you get a bit braver, and you take a tiny step, and then another tiny step. And then before you know it, you've done three steps, and so on and so on. And you know what? Most of the time, my clients, all they want is to be loved. Most people, that's all we want, isn't it? Just want a bit of love. And if for an hour, they get me going, but I think you're brilliant. That's not all I do, but do you know what I mean? But if that's all people want, and it helps them have the strength to go and do something else, then good. We should all be doing that, really.
So if there was a guy who came to you and he decided to try and clear all the stones off a massive field near his house and realised that was quite a big thing to try and do, and he was trying to do it secretly so no one knew, what advice would you give that guy?
I'd refer him on immediately. I'd say, I think you need to go and see a psychoanalyst, because they just let you talk.
Okay.
You know, they don't interfere.
Well, I just do the talking anyway. I just talk into the podcast. So I'm psychoanalyzing myself, so that's fine. Mm. So you did the jungle. You were in the jungle,
in
and out of the jungle.
I know. God, I was shit on the jungle. I really was one of the worst people they've ever had, I think. I mean, I wasn't even sort of really screaming properly. I just, you know what? I was in a really bad place. It was during those years.
Right.
And suddenly I think, oh, God, I just want a gift from heaven to get me out of this. And suddenly I get offered quite a lot of money to go into the jungle. I will do anything, you know, so... So off I go, but I was already, you know, I wasn't, you know, when you're not mentally having a good day, I had had a bad year, and then I think, I know, I'll go and eat a kangaroo's anus for money. And I can't recommend that as therapy. but, you know, it was, it's much harder than it looks, the jungle, by the way. It really is. You know, there are men dressed as trees to stop you escaping. There's all sorts of funny things. All the water you have to boil, you only get one knife, there's no salt and pepper. I now still drink hot water instead of tea because I got so used to it. It's very comforting drinking hot water. And I got really used to it. It's also a money-saving exercise.
How long were you in there? You were
I was first out. Yeah, rubbish. So. Completely rubbish. And also, well, the jungle is a popularity contest, isn't it? You know, you vote to keep people in. So if I was in with Joey Essex and he had 1.1 million followers on Twitter at the time, and I had something like 6,000. So I was first out because nobody voted to keep me in.
Yeah. I think you get out rid of people that you know, you kind of keep the people you don't like in as well. So if you're in the middle, I think, you want to go, I want that person to stay in so they can eat more kangaroo anus.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Essex was given everything to do.
Yeah.
He's lovely, by the way. I know you all want to know. He is really lovely. And he's not stupid at all. Look at the thousands of millions of billion pounds he's made out of being, you know, just a bloke, basically. He's uneducated, and people think that's a terrible thing to be. But actually, he's done much better than most people I know. Yeah. Who've had all sorts of education. So he's a lovely boy. I like him.
And I saw a clip. I didn't see this show, but you're on another reality show based on Shirley Valentine.
Oh, yes, Shirley Valentine. Did anyone see Shirley Valentine? Oh, it was lovely. Yes, it was supposed to be 8 women go to a Greek island and change their lives. And what they didn't remember was that Shirley Valentine wasn't single. Do you mean, you know, she had a husband, but we all had to be single. So I went with 7 other women. And they made us go on dates, and then they started saying it was the older person's love island, which was just the pit. And I went on a date with possibly the most boring man in the universe, who I couldn't understand anything he was saying. It's very sweet. I had to do speed dating, which I did a terrible thing where a young man, much younger than the rest of them, sat down, and I said, oh, hello, you look very young. Do you still live with your mother? And he went, no, my mother's dead. And I went, oh, I'm so sorry. And then his phone went. So I thought, hang on, you're on a speed date with me, and you're taking a phone call. So he's going, hello, 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 hello. I said, is that your mum? He went, no, she's dead. So sorry. And then I said, that's a nice shirt. Did your mum pick it out for you? I mean, I don't know what was the matter with him. I couldn't leave it alone. He just kept saying, no, she's dead.
Before she died.
I know, exactly.
Did she pick it out for you on her deathbed? Say, wear this if you're on holiday with the TV.
Really terrible.
Yeah.
I just kept asking him about his dead mother. And they only showed, I mean, there's a little clip on my Twitter profile thing that shows it, but they only showed half of it. I just went on and on and on. It was awful. But I didn't really like speed dating. I don't like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
No. I just don't really, I get a little bit sort of cross about it. Like,
well, it's sort of weird. It's a weird.
It's very strange. I prefer God's dating agency or whoever's in charge. I prefer
just waiting for old age pensioners.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I thought I worked as a funeral director, lady funeral director, get all the nice widowers.
Yeah. Mainly the men die first, though, so you'd have to go for the widows.
Yeah, no.
It's not
a bad plan, isn't it?
Mm. No.
Yeah. I have done quite a lot, but I am quite old. And if you're quite old, you've done quite a lot, haven't you?
Well, but most people, a lot of people will have a little flash in the pan and then that's it. I think anyone who manages to keep going in a career, and, you've had a family... two families really as well.
Yeah.
So it's
awful children.
Awful children.
Yeah, they're awful children.
Both the children, they're both charming. I met your daughter in a
in
a bar. Yeah.
She came to
because I'd seen her when she was. I'd met her at your house when she was a kid, and then I met her as an adult. Yeah. No, she was very nice.
She's very nice. Yeah. She runs her own stage at the Isle of Wight Festival.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a proper grown up and everything.
Yeah.
And Ted's just being a games designer, computer games designer, so that's really good.
It's crazy. It's crazy that kids grow up and become adults. And
it's
then
awful,
adults.
Really. I prefer them. Well, actually, I don't know, because if they're babies, you've got to look after them. That's quite boring.
Yeah, it's awful.
It?
That's an awful
And then
bit
I don't like it when they start being a bit cheeky and they suddenly realise you don't know everything after all. I don't like that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's wrong.
That's been my daughter since the start, to be honest. Yeah. So let's ask you some emergency questions before we did some backstage. But before we go, I want to know, and I don't know, this is my test to find out whether whether the guest is mental or not, basically.
Oh. I don't know.
I don't know what you're going to answer to this, so we'll find out.
Oh.
Have you ever seen a ghost, Annabelle Giles?
Have I ever seen a ghost? No, but I felt them.
Okay.
Is that not very...
That's all right.
I'm not Derek Acora, is that what you're asking?
Everyone sees ghosts. I haven't
seen one, but I feel them. When you walk into a building, I haven't had a grope of a ghost. That's a very weird thing to be... What's that with a ghost? What if it's a girl ghost?
You can do that.
Oh, God. Weirdo. No, I haven't, but I've gone into... I did a series on Stately Homes for Richard and Judy, which I wanted to call Jars' Piles, but they wouldn't let me.
Right.
They called it Home Stately Home. How boring is that? So anyway, so I did... And there were quite a few Stately Homes where I'd go in and go... Ooh. It's cold here and all that. But, I mean, I don't see why ghosts always live in stately homes.
And
but
it's not, it's cold in places, it's cold.
Yeah.
It's not just a ghost. If it's cold, that's not always a ghost.
Colder than the rest of the house.
Sometimes it's winter time.
Yeah.
And some rooms are colder than others. I mean, that's Richard Wiseman did a thing where he found out a place where a lot of ghosts were seen were in just a place where the draft came through. So you sense a change in the room, and that's what you're sensing, and then you're... Mm. Your senses create stuff around that.
But you can walk into a house, can't you, and go, oh, no, don't really like it. Do you know what I mean? There's a feeling in the bricks.
Only if you're mental, but yeah.
I am mad. Okay, good. I don't mind, but I'm not Derek Acora. That is good, though,
good,
isn't
that is
it? Because I'm not throwing feathers around.
We'll go for a random one. The ones backstage got very heavy. What do you consider the biggest waste of time from your life thus far? Annabelle.
How tempting is that? You're just asking me to say this, aren't you? But I'm not going to. The biggest waste of time. And I'm like, well, I often, because now that, when you're old, you suddenly get a bit of wisdom, don't you? Which is wasted completely because nobody listens to anything you say anymore because you're old. But I think the biggest waste of time is trying to impress people rather than trying to impress myself. Do you know what I mean? I'd give it up. Do you know what I mean? Just, you've got a big car, well done. You know, actually, I'm impressed. I've got a tiny little car and it costs nothing to run. It's really exciting and nobody ever thinks I'm speeding, though I have got quite a few points. But, do you know what I mean? Rather, I don't need a big BMW. I want a little tiny car, a little buzzy one that's cheaper and I can spend money on shoes instead.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's like trying... I found I sort of went through life going, yeah, I'm going to be really impressive, going to be really impressive. Then I went, actually, there's nothing impressive about me at all. And then I thought, I'm just going to be normal. You know, stop wasting time trying to impress people.
Yeah, that's good.
Is that a good answer or not?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, that's a very good answer.
Am I still mental? Yeah.
Oh, well, no, we only have mental people on this show.
Oh, right, okay,
so
good.
That's fine.
Good.
And that's a good thing. Because everyone who works in show business is insane.
It's pointless,
apart from me, I'm normal.
No. I'm just thinking, I wonder if any of my clients are going to hear this.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, we can take that out. You've stood up for the mental. It's
no, you can take out everything. I don't have it on at all. Yeah, no, I am. Yeah, no. Well, no. Do you know what? They don't know that I used to have this because I see a lot of much younger people,
okay, really,
and
yeah.
They don't know that I used to have this funny job. And they go, "Do you know what? I was doing the ironing the other day, and I thought, why's my voice of my therapist? And I'm on the telly."
Yeah.
She goes, "You were on the telly talking about the 1970s or something, 80s. Sorry, not that old." And they go, "I had no idea, but it doesn't change. It's really weird. They don't mind. And all the other therapists think I get lots of clients because I'm famous, but actually, people don't want to come and talk to me if they know me already." That's not very good, is it?
You know, you definitely should be. You should be back on the TV.
I'd
not
like to be doing funny things. You know, it's quite good fun being on TV, isn't it? While it's still with us, you know.
Well. But you mentioned the Gotcha. You're the only person in that. Well, the fact that Noel Edmonds selected you for a Gotcha sort of shows, you know. I mean, a lot of the people who did those are in prison now, but you're not.
Not
you're
yet.
No.
Yet.
So I was thinking the other day on a walk, I wonder if, like, Noel Edmonds popped up in DLT's prison cell and went, "Gotcha, yo, Edmonds!" Be quite a good one, wouldn't it? If that was it, he's playing the long game. would DLT be happy or angry? It's going, "Oh, yeah, I'm not. Oh, shit, I've been in prison." I don't think he's in prison anymore.
I didn't think he was. He's the Harry Cornflake.
Yeah,
in prison,
really? He's been in prison, yeah. I was also thinking because, you know, the, I've forgotten her name, but the Philippines leader who was in
prison. Imelda Marcos.
She was in prison for a long time.
She was in prison
for a long time. She got through it by listening to DLT. Did she return the... Is what?
Aung San Suu Kyi.
That's it, yeah.
Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yeah, that's a bit racist. But just shouting out, things like that. I think that was her name, you're right. So, but has she returned the favour? Is she doing little... I mean, I think she's back in prison now. I don't know. Anyway, she might be dead. We'll probably cut this out, James.
Yeah, cut that bit out.
We might be on dodgy ground here.
I don't want to be slighted with that sort of thing.
But you were done for a Gotcha, but B, you saw through the Gotcha straight away.
I
watched it the other day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And so you noticed the camera in the car.
Well, yeah.
It was quite a poor Gotcha if you hadn't noticed the camera, I think.
Well, no, there was the camera was in a little, you know, magic markers?
Yeah.
Well, the middle of the magic marker, I just saw this little sort of funny blue, purpley light thing. It wasn't a light, though. It was a camera lens, a tiny lens. But it was the way the guy got out the car and said, "Oh, I'm just going to go and have a word over there." And I thought, what about? We're on the way to somewhere. And he took his jacket off. Said, "I'm going to put my jacket in the boot." And I thought, well, okay, why are you telling me? It doesn't really, you know. And then he lifted up the boot and then there was a little bit of sort of fiddling about in there. And I thought, I wonder what he's doing. And then I sort of looked around and I just saw this little hollowed out magic marker, and then I thought, no, I'm imagining this. And then I looked up, because I was in the passenger, in the back seat, obviously, and they have those sort of things that you're supposed to hang suits on if you're a bloke, dry cleaning thing. And there's a little microphone on there.
Right.
And I went, and then as I spotted the microphone, a little red van drew up, and I went, oh, no. Hello, comms. Because I'd just done a series with bloody BBC with cameras in the car.
Right.
And that was the BBC comms van. And I went, oh. Hello, comms. And they went shooting off. And I went, oh, God, I've blown it. Because I know how much these things cost.
Yeah,
I said,
yeah.
Oh, no, I've blown the whole thing. I tell you what, I'll give you two versions. I'll give you one where I'm going along with it and one where I know, but you don't know that I know. So don't tell the driver. And then I thought, if this isn't true, then I'm just going to be completely mad. Imagine saying, just saying that to the inside of a car. And the driver came back and he didn't know. And they, oh, God, and it got really complicated, so I couldn't remember which version. You know, we had pink silage coming out of farmers and all that. Yeah. It was all very odd.
There was aliens in the
Noel Edmonds as an alien in the back seat.
And it was clearly Noel Edmonds talking as well. He does that kind of Noel Edmonds false voice.
Yes,
what I didn't like about it was because you beat him. And he was clearly put out by that.
Yeah, he was actually
and
very
then
cross.
They ended the episode by putting you on a kind of ghost train where you just got gunged.
Yeah, gunged and ruined my boots, which are my favourite boots.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, ruined. Yeah.
So did you know that was? Did you know the gunging
no,
was coming?
No, I was expecting two gotchas. I thought it was really clever to have guessed it, but they were absolutely seething. But I gave them a whole thing to show.
Yeah.
I could have just gone, well, no, I've guessed it. It's pointless. Forget it.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I gave him two versions.
You know, in a way, you're lucky. You just came out gunged. People have come off a lot worse. with old Edmonds, haven't they? But it's, you know, getting the 1p box. Getting the 1p box, that's what I was talking about. We're nearly done, Annabelle, I'm going to ask you another mercy question.
Go on,
it's been really good. Thank you very much.
Have I talked too much, though?
No, sorry. It's not possible to talk too much. I've had Brian Blessed on this podcast. It's been fine. I've managed to say some stuff. It's been nice. this is a mercy question I've been asking quite a lot recently, if you're listening at home, was in the summer. Which is, if you could take one item from an art gallery or museum and take it home and keep it, any art gallery or museum in the world, any painting or any artefact or anything in a museum, and you're allowed to keep it, because I think you should be allowed to. On every visit, I think you should be allowed to just pick one thing.
Left.
I know,
it's
a flawed system, but it'd be nice to have the stuff, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Is there anything you'd like to take home with you from a museum or art gallery?
Oh, God. Now, this is, if you thought you could like me, this is going to really stop all that from happening. You're going to really hate me now. I would take those bricks. Do you remember those bricks that someone threw paint over because they were an art installation? They were 144 bricks or something. I take those and donate them to somewhere that's building houses for... I would, for homeless people or something like that. I think that's much better use of a brick. I've got no time for that sort of idiotic...
But you could sell the artwork and give the money to the poor children.
No, I'd rather the bricks. No, because then it still exists as a sort of frippery and a pointless piece of wankery. Do you know what I mean? I'd much rather just donate it to some housing association or something.
Someone took that gold toilet, didn't they? In the week we were recording this, there was a gold toilet at Blenheim Palace, was it? I think it was Blenheim. And there was, I think it was an art installation. I don't think Winston Churchill said, I've got to have a solid gold toilet. And then they've stolen, someone's come in. And I think the Duke of that place said, you know, it would take some, it'd be quite difficult to steal this. And then they have something. It's worth like £4.3 million or something. It's solid gold. So someone's got away. You kind of think, you know, fair enough.
See, I don't think we've got the money for all that nonsense at the moment. I think we're all trying to survive.
Yeah.
You know, and I think to spend that much money on a loo seat is a terrible loo.
No, it's the whole loo.
The whole loo. Well, that's solid just disgusting.
Gold.
Sorry.
Yeah. I think it's a work of art. It's saying, you know, imagine if toilet was made of gold. That's probably it, isn't it? That's probably the point of that. Mm. Imagine what that'd be like. I mean, it'd be a waste of gold, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah.
We'd be pooing on it. Mm. Well, it works. It's a working toilet.
No.
Now you've said that, I would quite like to poo.
a poo in a gold loo?
Yeah.
Did it flush, though?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I hope so. Otherwise, there's your poo in there as well. That would take the value down, I would have thought.
It'd be listed at Sotheby's.
I mean, my poo might list, though. It
gold
might take
poo
it up.
With... Yeah, gold blue with Richard Herring's poo.
Yeah.
Item 147B. Yeah. No. I don't know. At the minute, I think we're all in crisis and emergency, and we need to stop fucking about and actually look after each other before things get any worse. Yeah. So I think solid gold blues that are worth millions of pounds are just a waste of money. Okay. I know that makes me sound really grim, but I can't. You know, I can't bear to think of people being very rich or very poor. And nobody being able to exist in between and help the others.
Mm. Well, people listening at home have been in the middle of Brexit, no deal Brexit at the moment. It's December at home. The people at home are in December. Imagine what a terrible life. Most of you are dead now. They're listening to the laughter of the dead. And they're laughing. These people are laughing at their own death. So, I mean, that's art there. That is art. I've just created art there, haven't I?
We're all still alive because we're pre-Brexit.
If you do die, if you feel yourself dying because of Brexit, do email me, let me know. If your husband were to die, just email us. It's quite sad he's died, but it's funny because of what you said. And I'll do a tribute to him at the end of that. Presuming I'm not also dead, I could also be dead. It's one in two. It's like the... it's like that thing, one in ten. So, that guy. All right.
So, I'm really sorry. Reference. I've been quite grim, haven't I? I'm
sorry.
No,
it's good. It's been grim. It's all this. You've been very funny.
I feel a bit grim.
We'll do this debrief off stage, but you've been funny.
What do you think? Out of ten, would you rather get me...
Also
series two or something? Would you get me on another one?
You can come back another time.
No good? Okay, thanks. Yeah. You want to come as a client? Because I think you should.
I think I Well, I was hoping, I'm paying you to do this. I should have got a bit more out of it.
I think you're...
I feel just as mad as I was at the start.
Yeah, that's why they come back, because they think they will get better one day. They never
I'm reasonably happy. The only thing I'd like to be is young again, but you can't do that.
I know.
You can't
do anything about that. No, you wouldn't really, though. I not would. Now. Oh, no. I see people under 30, and they have such a hard time of it. I had someone come, a young man come the other day, who had... parents who got on well together, and he had a great job, and he had a girlfriend, and he had, family were really good, and everything. And he'd come because he had anxiety, and that's because he didn't realise that it's okay to feel a little bit worried sometimes, because they honestly believe that they have to feel brilliant all the time.
Yeah.
That's a bad world.
Yes, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, well,
Yeah, well, that's a real bummer to end on. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause to Annabelle Jones! Fantastic, thank you very much. Come back next week. There'll be another one next week. Thank you. How do you like them sky potatoes?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.